Welcome back to episode 3 of Behind the Vel, where we give an inside look into Superval Ammunition, the business, ourselves, and everything about ammo and the company. Today, joined by co-host Taylor. Taylor, what's going on?
Hey. Okay, first, we're going to talk about how your morning was.
Really?
I'm pissed off. Last time I forgot to check in, so we got to put you first.
You're probably the worst day to ask me how my morning is because I'm pissed off.
Okay.
We're going to see how today's podcast. So you guys might get to see a little bit different side of me. I will say when you're in business and you hold certain standards and you don't have any other way, but you hold those same standards personally, you get pissed off a lot. Because it's a challenge sometimes to get people and individuals to fall in line with that or to understand the big picture of that. So this morning so far has been a bit of a struggle. Also mad because I didn't draw any tags. So
insult to injury.
I won't be killing anything in the state of Nevada this year, but maybe I'll go kill something else somewhere else. We'll see.
Sounds like. How about you? Have to. It's pretty good.
Yeah, you're having a good morning. You walked into me on one, I guess.
Yeah, life of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, people, I think that's the misconception people don't understand with entrepreneurship and business is it's constant and always, and it follows you home, it goes everywhere with you, and it's ages you quickly and a lot of sleepless struggles, and some people don't get it or understand it. And when you put it all in and then people around you just think it's gravy and they don't see the big picture. But that's my job, is to try to paint it the best I can for everyone. But
yeah,
it doesn't always work that way.
And then I get mad. It's not like Lamborghinis and vacations that we see on Instagram.
It could be. I mean, at some point I'm like, hey, okay, this is enough. Let me just go enjoy it. But when we're aiming much higher, it's delayed gratification. So most in society, for the position that I'm in or we're in, would have already done that stuff. And we could. But then it would inhibit and lengthen the time of the big end goal of where I want it to be by the time I'm in my 40s. So, yeah, I don't know. It's irritating. Let's go on to something else.
Okay.
So this week, what are we doing on this episode?
Okay, so I have some questions. We actually got a lot of questions this week on people are tuning in on our Q&As. So I picked 3 in a different variety, like always, and blind questions for you to answer. So if
sweet,
let's stimulate a different part of your brain because I know there's lots in there. And the first one, let's talk about a product. This one is one of our more recent releases. It's been out for a while.
It's over a year, if it's what I think you're going to say.
Okay, so first question. What was your process and thoughts behind developing the PCC Blitz ammo?
Yeah, it's been over a year and a half, probably. So with the PCC Blitz, what we looked at on the market, and a big part of our customer base is the competition shooters, and a challenge with the PCCs, and you see the same challenge with like open guns, is the variety of the builds. With PCC specifically, there's a couple different type of PCCs. There's blowback, there's bearing, there's roller delay. You have like, say like the SIG MBX, and then you have your traditional blowback, and then you have the JP5. And all three of those platforms are going to chrono different just due to the way they're set up. But then you also have the differences in the competitors with the different barrel length. So a PCC specific load is very challenging because there's not one size fits all. So like a 9mm, you could say 124 grain going 1050 or 130, 131 power factor. And across all the pistol platforms, most pistols in competition are between 4.5 and 5, unless you get like a long slide, but most people aren't shooting over 5 inch. Your twist rates have a little bit of play, but you can typically across all the guns see within 5 power factor of each other. The challenge with PCC is if you do a 124 or 147 or 115 from like a JP5. So JP5 is the velocity of a pistol, and there's no bullshit. Like that's the reality, and that's the challenge with the JP5 platform, plus different guns from JP5 over different iterations. Some of them are blowback speed, some of them are pistol speed, and it's very frustrating for the consumer and for an ammo manufacturer. And then when you go into like a blowback, they're going to be a lot, typically a lot faster. The MBX is kind of in between. And those are the three, the most common platforms. JP5 is very popular, a lot of people shooting it. And then comparison to like the Mean Mall, which is now kind of taking over everything, that's a blowback speed. So a good example would be 124 grain, 9 mil through a pistol that's going 1050, so say 130 power factor. Through a JP5, it's going to be around 130 power factor for the newer serial models. The older ones, not so much. But that's great, because if you own a JP5, you can go buy off-the-shelf ammo, and they should market it this way, but they don't. You could go buy off-the-shelf ammo and be within power factor because it's pistol velocity. Where people struggle is that when they go buy PCC-specific ammo and they fail chrono. Because if I set a blowback at 130 power factor and then I shoot it through a JP5, I'm 115 power factor. So that's kind of the challenge with development of a load. Now, when we get into nerd science and a little bit of why the 100 grain came about. So for years, we have a quite big team of PCC shooters. We sponsor the best PCC shooters in the world, all the top. I think we sponsor like Worlds just ended, and of the top 10, I mean, I think four or five of them shoot for Supervel. So we knew we needed to do a load for the PCC shooters. And as shooters went away from the JP5 and into the Mall and some of the other stuff and looking at different blowbacks, I just wasn't doing it because I knew competitors would, if I positioned it towards a blowback, then guys would fail chrono. If I positioned it towards a JP5, then all the blowbacks would be like 145 power factor, be way too hot. And I didn't want to do multiple loads because then that just creates a headache on the consumer and on the customer service side. So in testing, that load was developed with Max Legrandis. And to that point, Max had won a national title with every single one of our loads. He won with our 147 reman, with our 124 reman, and our 115 reman. So he has national titles across those. Then we get into, hey, you know, there's something missing. Let's work on development. So that load was developed like 2 weeks leading up to nationals, and which is crazy. And it's just testament to Max's skill set. But he was coming into town. I think we were prepping for PCSL Nats as well or something. So he was coming through town and he'd stop in. I'd come into the shop. We'd worked on development. We'd test it. We'd shoot it in the shop. We'd group shoot it. We'd chrono it. And, you know, we worked down through all the different bullet manufacturers, testing different things, trying to find the most accuracy, most consistent, that performed the way we wanted to it. The crazy thing is, you know, you see huge power factor swings from like 147, the heavier the bullet, the bigger power factor swing you'll see from a JP style to a mean or a blowback style. The lighter the bullet gets, the tighter that gets. So when you go to 124, you know, we're 15 power factor apart is about the average. So if we're 130 on a blowback, we're 115 on a JP. When we go to 115, we're like 10 to 12 power factor difference. Well, when we went to the 100 grain, and this is just science, when we went to the 100 grain bullet, we were within about 6 power factor, which is acceptable. So on the blowbacks for the 100 grain, we're like 135, 136 for most blowbacks. But then on the JPs, we're 129 to 130. So the reason we settled on 100 grain is because we could develop one load that functioned across all platforms. The other beautiful thing about the 100 grain is the powder we used. Most companies that make PCC-specific loads, there's only a couple of them, they use the wrong powder. So that muzzle device, that compensator muzzle brake, is not doing shit. It's a counterbalance weight at that point. It's not actually working the compensator because of the burn rate of the powder. We use specific powders with that bullet to where if you watch an open shooter and you see all the gas coming out of the comp and the ports, when you shoot the blitz, it's the same thing. It's a lot louder. It's snappy. It'd be like shooting an open gun, but the dot doesn't move. The other thing with the lighter bullet, you know, it's going 1,300 feet per second. So it's faster on target, but it's cycling the bolt faster. So it's more of a tactile feel, but the dot's not moving because the compensator is actually doing its job and keeping the barrel down. but it allowed for faster splits. So in the testing with Max, I mean, he's a monster on splits. He could split like 0.08, 0.10, like on command. And with the 147, so I'll work from heavy light. So on the 147 with the double tap, like he's 1.0 to 1.2 splits is like a struggle, or he's outrunning it because the bolt is cycling slower. And then the gap between the double tap, you know, you got like a 4 or 5 inch gap. As we went lighter, the shots got tighter on top of each other because the muzzle moved less and the bolt cycled faster. So his splits got faster. So when we settled on 100 grain within the shop, we're shooting at 25 yards. And he's stacking two of them, touching each other with a 0.8 split, which is insane. But that's why he's Max Legrandis. We then had exercise and gone through all the bullets. I think Nationals was like in a couple days. And I gave him a bag of 500 rounds. And he hadn't shot or practiced with the ammo. He tuned his gun within the sessions of testing. He took that bag, went to Nationals, and crushed everybody with it. Which is a testament to his skill.
Yeah.
But he did a video for us. If you guys want to watch it, it's on the YouTube channel, on the explanation of some of the benefits. So quicker to target. So on swingers where you may have to double pass a swinger because the time to target, you can now single pass it for two reasons. The bullet's getting there faster. So your holdover of like Charlie Delta now becomes Alpha Charlie based on swinger speed and distance. But also the gun is cycling faster and the dot's not leaving the target because it's the comp's actually working and the gun's staying flat. So since that load's been introduced, it's like taken off. It's pretty much all the top guys, whether they're sponsored by us or not, shoot the PCC Blitz. When you shoot it through a handgun, it's bananas. It won't pass chrono, but like a lot of Steel Challenge guys shoot it. A lot of match directors use it for their popper calibration because through a pistol, it's about 115 power factor. So it just works out. So it's kind of a load that we can, any PCC, we know they're going to pass chrono with it, whether it's a JP, whether it's a mean, a traditional blowback, an MPX, even if they're cutting their barrels, you know, if someone's running like a 11.5 with the Brecky comp to get to their 16, they're still going to pass chrono. So the challenge with that, and we did this when we did the world shoot, is like in IPSC, you can't be below 115 grains. So as perfect as that load is, it didn't work for World, so we had to develop a whole new load for World Shoot at 124, which means I had to develop two loads for the slower JPs and then another load for the blowbacks. But that's kind of the – when you shoot it through a pistol, it's like a 22. It's super flat shooting. It's loud, but watch the dot or the sights. They're not moving. It's more straight back, poppy. And if you shoot open guns or seen open guns, it's that same concept based on bullet weight and burn rate and velocity. The same thing is felt when you shoot like our 90 grain defensive. Super loud. That 90 grain out of a Glock 17 is going like 15 or 1600 feet per second. Like it's screaming. It's a similar concept to that. So it's just quicker on target, faster bolt cycle, less dot movement. So it's the perfect purpose built load for the PCC. Sorry, a lot of nerd stuff on there.
I'm
You're
sold.
Cheering me up with
I'm
product
sold.
Questions. So
I knew. We just had to stimulate your brain on something else.
tickle the tism and I'll dump on it, I guess. But yeah, that load, it's a great, great load. And anyone who tries it and compares it, they're like, oh crap, like this is cheater mode. Especially if you put it in a handgun. Like there's quite a few three gunners and like tac game shooters or even PCSL, where you don't have chronograph, they'll shoot that through their pistols because it's cheating, basically.
I'm just like getting everyone the cheat codes.
Yeah, no, it's super flat. So at Dragon's Cup, we had a demo bay with Atlas Gunworks. We had our trailer set up. Their booth was with our booth. And then we had a full demo bay. Mm-hmm. And they came up like, oh, we want to try some of those 100 grains. Just for personal, I was like, hey, put this in your gun and go shoot it. Go shoot it on the demo bay. And once they did, they kept, when shooters were coming over to demo guns, they're like, hey, try this, like shoot this, because it makes the guns feel even flatter and like an Erebus with the compensator. Like it's a perfect balance for it. You won't hit power factor, but if you're shooting Steel Challenge or three gun stuff through a pistol, it's like a game changer. Faster to target, like it's pretty awesome.
Well, now coming to a range near you, the PCC Blitz and a handgun.
So that's where, that's the origination of the Blitz. It was the high standard of Max Legrandis not settling for anything else, wanting to be able to split the gun that fast, faster time on target. And it is, I would say that is across ammunition, across the board, that is one of the only offerings in the marketplace that gained you a substantial competitive advantage due to the input on the gun and how the gun performs and feels. Like, there wasn't that for PCC before. And some companies have tried to rip it off, and luckily there's not too many bullet suppliers that do it, and I buy up all the supply chain, so they can't. But there's some secret sauce within that that I don't think anyone's going to mimic, and I think we kind of cornered the marketplace on the Blitz, and we offered in remanufactured and factory new.
Awesome. All right, well, that's the PCC Blitz.
Yeah, check it out. All right. Check it out, man.
Okay, so next question. This one's a personal question. Again, lovely. User submitted. Maybe not the best day for a personal question, but here we go. Out of all the things you've done, what made you decide on the ammo business?
Oh, man. So, you know, there's a saying like, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. That somewhat applies. My second business was in the gun industry. It was a firearms training as an instructor. My fourth business was a full retail gun shop. So I've always worked. I haven't gone more than 2 or 3 years without owning a business in the gun industry. And when I first got into it is because that was my passion. I love shooting and I love guns. And so I'm like, well, how can I use this business and buy stuff personally as business write-off so my wife doesn't kill me when I'm buying guns and gear and accessories, because it's a justifiable business expense. And that's legitimately, like, when I started heavily instructing, was that money was to buy more toys and stuff and to do, you know, to teach. I think I've, in the state of Nevada, I've certified, I haven't instructed for probably 6 or 7 years now, but just in CCW alone, I think I did over 5,000 concealed carry within that like 7-8 year span. It was quite a bit. So that business was super cool. And then the businesses and like cosmetics and other random shit that I've done coming back into the ammo side. So I was kind of doing consulting, through Stoker Solutions for some other brands in the industry, camera companies. And, you know, I've always kept the ammo industry or the gun industry at an arm's reach. But coming back into the ammo thing, it kind of goes like on that. At the time I was shooting professionally, like heavily sponsored by gun companies. And it started with consulting and working with other ammo companies. They made an exit, sold the company. And I was now free to communicate with other, you know, ammunition brands. And as a shooter, one of the biggest things you want, like a gun sponsor is cool. You know, so like I was sponsored by Atlas Gunworks for, I think, 5 years. I was the pro team captain, did that whole thing. But you're getting guns. A gun's not a consumable. The actual ideal sponsor is ammo. Because if you're shooting at a Grandmaster high level, the ammo's costing way more than the guns. You're going to buy 2, maybe 3 guns, your primary match gun and some backup guns, practice guns. But the ammo, I mean, you're shooting 3,000 to 5,000 rounds a month potentially. And with ammo prices, that could really add up. So I'd always looked at it that way. And that's kind of what a little bit led me into within coming in to Supervel before I had ownership of Supervel, was as a sponsored shooter and as helping with branding and marketing to help scale the brand. And most of the businesses I've done have been, and that's the importance of like IPSC and USPSA, is most of the relationships, business relationships I've built have been met through the shooting sports. And that's how me and my business partner, Cameron, that's how we actually met. And I came in initially as a consultant to help with the marketing and branding side and kind of blew it up. And then the structure wasn't in place. So then that led to, hey, you're the president of the company, to, hey, you own the company type thing over the past years. And we can go deeper into that. But for me, it still goes back to, I'm obsessive about the process of business. No matter what the business is, I thoroughly enjoy building companies, bootstrap companies. Never finance, outside money, any of that. I enjoy bootstrap companies doing it organically. And that's how we've built Supervel. We've never taken outside finance. We've came in and built organically, built the brand organically, don't hold any debt. So I enjoy the process of business, and then it just makes it even better that it's involved with something I love. The one downside to it is it can, if you're thinking of getting into a business in the gun industry or anything that you love, it can ruin what you love. So when I started instructing, like I was on the range all the time. And then once I started instructing, I was so burnt out, it kind of ruined it to where I didn't want to train personally because I spent so much time teaching others. I just wanted to be done. And the same thing has kind of happened a little bit in the ammo side is when you kind of overwhelm yourself with it, sometimes you just need a break. And so when I went from competing, you know, 20 plus majors a year, traveling all over, as I dive more into the ammo side of the business and super busy with the business, I couldn't go to a range without being bothered by a customer or whatever. It kind of ruined it. And for those of you who know me as a competitor, the last couple of years, probably 2.5 to almost 3 years, you know, in 2022, I went away from all my sponsorships to focus on business because I couldn't do it due diligence. And as the business has grown, I've spent a lot less time out there competing because I'm building a company, but also it's not as relaxing as it used to be because I'm not left alone. And nothing against people approaching me and stuff. But the reality is that was like my therapy. And when you're obsessive and you got extreme OCD and other stuff, you're just thinking about business the whole time because now your business is your fun. So sometimes a business can kill a hobby. And that's what I would, that's what brought me into the business. And that's what kind of killed the hobby side of it. But I'm trying to find more enjoyment with it because I know I'm not as competitive as I once was. I might have a grandmaster ranking, but I don't compete on a grandmaster level because I don't have the time to put into the training. We have, you know, kids and business and other stuff that has to take priority. So the step away and now stepping back into competition a little bit more, I'm there just to have fun. I don't care where I place. I don't have any ego in it. I'm still, I would say, better than 80%, 85% of the competition. But understand, I don't train. I don't practice, you know, nearly as much as I used to. And I just try to find more enjoyment with it. So, yeah, coming into the ammo industry, that's why. Is the initial thought was, hey, I'm passionate about it. I enjoy it. And with any business, it makes it a lot easier when the times are hard to have a purpose. And when you go into a business that if you're just looking at money, you'll fail. Like there is such struggle times that you have to have more of a reason to keep going. There's going to be times as an entrepreneur where you're not making any money and you may go years without making money. And we've done that. And you have to have something, a bigger reason to keep going. If it's a business that you're just looking at as a financial thing, good luck. You know, the stress and the challenges aren't worth it. But when you're ingrained in that space already, like I was, it makes it worth it because when you have the hard times, you still have the fun of doing something that you love to do. And for me now, it's like, aside from the business side of mentorship and American manufacturing and stuff, on the ammo side, like the development of it, like the first question, like I get excited about the development side and, you know, the potential opportunities that that the brand is growing into, like that keeps me going. And the purpose constantly changes as we continue to evolve, but yeah, that's kind of the long, drawn-out answer.
Do what you love, I guess.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to be honest. It can kill what you love if you're not careful. So you have to find continued purpose and reason behind it. And it shouldn't be a money thing because it'll kill it quicker than anything. If it was based on money, I would have stopped a long time ago.
Yeah, well, it's just like anything. You have to be passionate about it, and the money will come.
Yeah, and it makes, if you're starting a business, starting it in something that you're already passionate about makes the grind a lot better because when you're not getting paid and you're working hundreds of hours a week, you're naturally just passionate about what you're in. That's what you're into, so it makes it easier to do the struggle and it makes it easier to go through the struggle. And then, like I said, I'm a dreamer with where I want to go in life. And so in the struggle times, I'm looking at the 10-year plan and stuff like that to position to where it's like, hey, I'm not doing this for today. I'm doing it for my kids and I'm doing it for 10 years from now. And I'm also passionate about what I'm doing. So it makes me hard to beat. We'll just say that.
Okay. So you actually kind of led into our last question at the end of your answer there.
Oh, it's sweet.
Like you already knew what was coming.
No.
Last question is, where do you see Supervel in the next 5 years?
5 years is pretty short, but I would say, so the next big thing obviously is the move into the new facility. We're over doubling our size. What will that be next month in July? We're going to start that process. We have a month to get it done. The new space is going to allow us to further vertically integrate. And the rapid growth of the business, what's kind of held us back is the foundation of where we are, like physically where we're at, is we don't have the ability to have some of the machinery we should have. We don't have the ability to vertically integrate because of space. And we've just honestly done in 5 years what most companies take about 20 to 25 years to do, which is awesome. And it's reassuring. I'm like, we're doing the right thing, especially right now, because a lot of our competitors are going out of business right now and we're still growing, which is good. The new location will have excess power and excess space. When we moved into this location 2 years ago, everyone was like, man, this is way too much space. Because we went from, so when I came to the company, it was 2,500 square feet. And then within a year, expanded to 5,000. And then a year later, expanded to 15,000. And when we came into 15,000, it's like, well, that's, we don't need all this. I'm like, just wait. Within 8 months, it was full and we're out of space again. And we've only been here for almost 2 years. And now we've got to move again. We're like doubling to almost 30,000. And I already know that's not going to be enough space. But we have until 2028. So within Las Vegas, just for transparency, an acre of land is $1 million, like just for the dirt. Plus your labor here is hospitality labor. So you don't have much skilled labor. So you have to do a lot of training. So you have those challenges. So it's not smart to do business here in manufacturing. That's why there's not a lot here. So as we continue to grow and we need more space, it costs a lot of money. I will say that the space we're moving into, if I was in other states, I could have probably 150,000 square foot building on land for the same monthly payment. And that's just the reality of it. But we've ingrained ourselves here, families here, owners, we're here, employees are here, our team's here. So we're going to be here. It's just, we have to be very strict on how we do finance and how we do our business. But the new space is going to open it up to allow us to do a lot more things. So more into other, I can't leak too much, but other component manufacturing, we'll just say, and I'll leave it broadly at that. But one of those things will be happening by August, and there will be more about that coming into, we'll just say, the defensive component manufacturing side of the business. That's going to grow a lot. And then within the next 3 years, we want to be more further vertically integrated to, we'll just say that, if you think powder, or say brass, primer, powder, bullet, we should be able to make 2 to 3 of those components 100% in-house for all of our lines. And the new space will give us the space, power, and everything to do that. How that happens, there's a lot of things that have to fall into place on the finance side and whatnot. Now, that's a 3-year plan by 28. And then when we hit 2028, I do not want to stay under a landlord because of the type of business we do. It's a nightmare on regulation, the requirements on insurance. I mean, just our insurance premiums annually is more than a, you know, mortgage on most buildings, just an insurance premium. And those insurance premiums are purely there because the landlord requires that. If we owned the building, it wouldn't be there. So by 28, the goal is to either convince the city of Henderson to quit being dummies and release land for us to build probably 100,000 square foot facility, or I'm moving part of the company elsewhere, whether it's say to Pahrump or to Arizona or Utah or whatever, because at that size of the and the projection of the company, it would not make sense to stay here in the format that we are. If we're staying in the Las Vegas Henderson area, we have to own the facility due to the type of manufacturing. When it comes to like explosives and hazardous, the facility has to be built appropriately. So we have to build a facility. There's no owning or buying an existing building. They're not built that way. They don't exist here. We have to build it. So even though we're moving in the next month, I'm already looking at that for 3 years, buying land, building a building, because that's a multi-year process. Those would be the biggest jumps for Supervel. And the next 5-year plan would be at 5 years from today to be vertically integrated across almost all components, at least 3 of the 5 components, with the exception being powder and primer. and we have great strategic alliances where we're locked in and okay on those two things, where it doesn't make sense for the risk of powder and primer due to hazardous to bring that in-house. Most companies that are doing that, you know, that's when they're in the multi-hundred-million-dollar where it makes sense for that investment. I would much rather just dial in our strategic partnerships, which we have. And reality is right now I couldn't make it for the price I'm paying. But the other components within 5 years to be 100% vertically integrated in manufacturing, and that requires a much bigger facility, a lot more American jobs, hundreds of American jobs, and that's kind of my five where we're at on goal. And we are on track. We're ahead of schedule on all these things happening, but it comes down to local bureaucrats and that all working out to for that to be able to happen and to contend the challenge of doing it organically. And that's why, you know, a lot of this importance of podcasts and the communication and our customer service is because every order that comes in from our customers is directly going to the growth and scale of the company. We're not bringing in outside investors. We're bootstrap building this company organically, which can take more time and is a lot more stress, but it's way more secure. Because in this marketplace, as a business owner, companies come and go because the market space, it's up and down constantly and it's very volatile. And most companies that are now going bankrupt, it's because of debt leverage and borrowing money in a high time, and then the bottom falls out and they can't pay their bills and the banks pull their money or whatever it may be, and then now they're out of business. And that's constantly happening right now. My hope is to capitalize on some of those opportunities on the machinery side and the expansion side of the business to better position ourselves to become more vertically integrated and secured. As component manufacturers, the reason to push in that way is because a lot of them are getting acquired and bought up by Vista and the bigger ones to where it's leaving nothing for other OEMs. So it's like, hey, I have to do it myself for us to survive. So the five-year goal for Supervel is to be beholden to nobody but ourselves with no debt, a large facility, hundreds of employees, American dream for as many Americans as I possibly can, and to continue to stay 100% American made in manufacturing. And just this morning, I think I spent, it wasn't that much money, it's like $6,000 just on some bits and tooling for some of the machinery. And then I look at it from China and it's like literally 10% of the price and I could get it quicker. But I bought all American tooling, all American machinery, and I'm pretty locked into that commitment. I feel like there's an ethical point for that. And there's like a little bit of a karmic thing to where we've been blessed doing it this way and we're going to continue to be blessed if we continue to do it this way. So that's really the five-year goal. If people want to know about the product side of that five-year goal, the growth into a lot of the restrictions in our current facility on the machinery side is the reason we don't do a lot of the larger rifle calibers is because the machinery required to do it, we don't have the space for it or the power. So that'll be coming too within the next year or so. We'll get into some of the variety of rifle. When you look at pistol manufacturing, it's totally different machinery. It requires less powder, less space, power, less space. It's a little bit more doable. When you get into some of the larger 308 and up and stuff and some of the bigger hunting calibers, it requires different machinery, more power, more space, which we don't have right now, but we will have. So that'll all help us get to that five-year goal. And then the 10-year beyond that is just for that to double, triple, and scale and to continue to make Supervel a household name. On the sales side, am I too long-winded on this? My explanations are very long. I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
But I'm very transparent. I just tell it. I don't care like what my competitors or anyone trying to do it because they're not going to beat me at it. So on the consumer buying side, you'll see like we're working with Optics Planet and we're going to be working with some other as big or bigger than Optics Planet here in the next probably 6 months to continue to push the brand out there and to get it more on the shelves. I get it when customers complain like, oh, the shipping costs. Well, you got to realize we're in Vegas. You're in Florida or New York or wherever. We don't touch the shipping. It directly links with UPS to our website. It charges what it actually costs. We don't make money on our shipping. We don't do any of that, but it costs money to get it across the United States. So our dealer program, which has grown immensely, we're putting so much focus in that because we want our products closer to you, the consumer, to where you can, and hopefully the dealer map will go live soon, but to where you can go look and find our products and go in and buy them in person and, you know, not have to pay the shipping. And then we're looking at wholesale and distribution options with like Optics and some of these other bigger companies that have distribution centers, because we're sending them like pallets and truckloads of munitions to where then they, your shipping from them would be a lot cheaper and getting them to further expand the lines. And there's some other things we're looking at for distribution in those regions as well. I won't talk too much about that, but I'll just say that if the alliance between some of the big distributors doesn't happen or it doesn't make feasible sense to the customer, I will put a distribution center on the East Coast to solve this issue, because every year we lose millions of dollars just in abandoned carts on our shipping. But there's not much I can do right now because that's what it costs to actually ship it there. And we appreciate all of you. Like in Florida, they're like our number three state and they're all the way across there and they buy millions every year. Like that's amazing. But when I look at Florida, how much we lose because of the shit, I can look and see where they left their cart on the shipping page and how much money was left on the table. Mm-hmm. Irks me. So we're working to fix that. So that's something, you know, a lot shorter than 5 years that'll help. But the goal is to really grassroots, kind of like the underground. And that's how I like this brand to appear. We're not ultra commercial. We're not dumping money into ads. You do all the social media. You know, we're filming it on a flip phone. We're not paying videographers. We're doing it for Americans, by Americans, the American way. And the reason we're keeping it that and not wasting money on it is because how aggressive I'm being on getting the company to where I need it to be. Because in this space, there's a escape velocity, we'll call it, to where you either stay small or you get big. But if you're going to get big, you got to get big quick so you don't get eaten up or cut off. Yeah. And that's typically, you got to do that within 3 to 5. And so we're at that point where we're definitely not small anymore and we're on all the big dogs' radars that want to buy us, and I'm laughing at them, but they will do whatever they can to choke us out. And so we've got to stick it in their face, punch them in the face, and get up to their size as quickly as possible. And that's where my anger and aggression this morning might come from, is making that bigger step. And most companies aren't going to. They're staying downsized to where they're not on the radar. They're comfortable. They're netting more money. You know, they're in like the $3 to $5 million range as a business, and they're okay with that. Well, I'm not. So we want a much bigger legacy and brand to be built, and do it as quickly as I can is the goal.
Yeah. What I've witnessed with your entrepreneurship just throughout what the past however many years you've been, 10, 15 years?
Right now. So people are like, oh, how long have you been doing this? So I start first business when I was 18 and I'm 35. So I've been an entrepreneur for that long. I don't do math well.
Well, don't put it on me to do that.
17.
Yeah.
17 years.
So the past.
So almost half my life.
So the one thing that, well, one of the many, but the one thing that sticks out in my head that's never changed is you're never comfortable. Like you never find comfort, and in a good way. Like you never, most people, like we started out, I made the joke about the Ferraris and vacations or whatever. Like you've never got to that point where it's like, it's okay. Because we are always pushing and you're always getting us to the next level and all that stuff, which is great. But I think a lot of people don't see like the dark side of that.
Yeah, well, you got to become a bit of a masochist, enjoy the suffering, which I do. And so it's a personality thing. And like I said, throughout my journey of entrepreneurship, majority of businesses fail within the first 5 years on the finance side, and there's other things, but a lot of them get comfortable. And the reality, and if you look at, let's just say America, is your valuation of your dollar gets devalued every year. So $1 million was a lot of money 15 years ago. Now it's not. You know, home prices, everything. So if you're staying the same, you're actually losing. And your competitors are actually passing you. So for me, you know, I hit the ceiling always. Like we hit the wall and blow through the wall, go around the wall, navigate. And that's why in the past episode I talked about staying nimble and so I can steer the ship aggressively, because that's what it requires in the way that we're doing this business. But me as an individual, and I've programmed myself this way, and I was very blessed growing up to come from a family of entrepreneurs. My father, all my siblings, and then the people that mentored me early on, and I got to see it. And that's why I talked in, I think, the first episode about showing, it's your job as a man to be an example to your kids and to society and to show those things so they can aspire, because society's not showing that anymore. They're like weak and frail as men. So to be strong, to be powerful, to be aggressive, to have the ability, but to control that and to build excellence and personal excellence is like, that's my job for our children to show that and for my employees to show that. And the only way you do that is you avoid comfort. And every plateau we hit, if I were to step back 5 years ago and said, hey, that's where it'd be, like, oh, wow, that'll be amazing. I can't wait to get there. You know, on a finance side, I remember growing up, because a lot of our family's like medical and stuff. It's like, oh, I want to be a doctor of osteopathic medicine. I'm like, oh, if I could make like $250,000 a year, like that's insane money.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I barely graduate high school, don't go to college. And once I make that money, it's like, oh, that's nothing. And then when you get there, most people will get comfortable. Like, oh, I want to make $1 million. Once you actually make $1 million and realize it's not that hard in business and you get there, it's like, well, do you stay there or do you push? And as they say, like $1 million, your first $1 million is harder to make than your first 10, and your first 10 is harder to make than your first 100, because at some point, once you figure it out, it's rinse and repeat. And we've become in that rinse and repeat to where then it becomes, you know, more rapid on a finance side, because you've built your model and it's proofed out and it's working. So let's rinse and repeat it. So for me, why I don't like to get comfortable is because I don't want to get past, and I get more aggressive in the slow times. If people looked at the way I am in business, when things are popping and good, we're like not hibernating, but we're building stock. So that way when things get slow, we can be ultra aggressive and take advantage of that situation and scale the company. And that's how we've built it. So it's kind of a suffering point where at some point I'm already wired that way, and it can be very miserable. And for you and for the kids and everything, it's like, well, where does this switch turn off? And the reality is, by the time talking to other very wealthy to billionaire level, by the time you get to that point, you can no longer turn it off because you're now programmed that way. And you see this with like pro athletes and stuff, like where's the enjoyment in it? That's why for me, I think I'm already there in that mindset. And so the enjoyment is actually the work. The enjoyment is actually the struggle. The enjoyment is actually the process, the suffering, the pain, because that's the only place you're feeling something, which may not be healthy. And I know it's not, but at the same point, any time in my life I've stepped aside and relaxed, I can immediately show you where things have slipped and fallen apart. So I typically don't anymore. And I don't think I have for the past 7 to 8 years. And it took me 7 to 8 years of entrepreneurship to learn this, that I try not to, I really don't let up. And I just constantly slow push, and it continues to pay off, and then delayed gratification. And you know, you'll say, it's like, when is it enough? Because years ago, if it's like, oh, if I can build $1 million company, that'd be amazing. And then you get there and it's like, oh, I need a $10 million company. And then you get there and you're like, oh, I need a $50 million company, or I need, whether it's that, or I need my brand this size, I need this. But anytime you get there, I've already pushed the goal. So like before with me, before I hit a goal, whether it's a financial or personal or whatever in business, when I'm about 80 to 90% of that goal, I set another one further above that. So that way when I get it, I don't get that emptiness of, well, now what do I do? Now what's next? I've already shifted focus to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing, to continue to push that drive and that the passion about it to continue to grow the business. It is an immense amount of stress. But it's forced discipline, and you're hardening yourself, because the things that, you know, I'm 35, doing this for 17 years, and I don't think in 17 years I've worked less than 120 hours in a week, and that's the truth. And I started that at 18 years old, so I'm molded this way. And I know that good luck competing with me. Like, to be frank, you know, with the time put into it, I've worked 2 lifetimes almost. And I've got 2 lifetimes of experience in the business side of things, but I know I have 10 lifetimes of things still to learn. And so I love that forceful aggression, because I can directly put that in my toolbox, and I become more valuable and potent as an individual for whatever I want to do. I'm going to be successful, and we're going to accomplish, because I don't know quit, and we just continue to push, and I avoid comfort, because comfort to me is like cancer. And that's, you know, that's not for everybody. And that's the separator in business and in sports and athletics and most high achieving things. If you look at those people, they avoid comfort at all cost. and they can't relax. I'm sorry. Like, I can't go on vacation and relax because I'm like, I'm supposed to be progressing in some way, whether it's like your personal development, your spiritual development, your business development, your financial, whatever it may be, have to be moving forward. It could take, you know, for me, just a little insight on me, like, no, I don't know any male in my family that's lived past 65, and that's the reality. So I'm on borrowed time for health reasons. I mean, just lost my father, and what was he, 60, 61, 62? Yeah, you know, so I'm already, in my eyes, I'm halfway through my life. You know, and I watched my dad for the last 10 to 15 years suffer and not able to work. So then I'm already three quarters through my life genetically based on him, his father, his father, his father down the line. So whenever I think of comfort, I think of, hey, I've only got 10 more good years. And hopefully that's not the reality, but I work in that way. So that way I can get to that escape velocity point within 10 years to where then I'm not a burden on you and the kids. And that way it's, everything is okay. And when we get there, and that's the purpose, a lot of the purpose for me is building for that future to where it can be enjoyed by everyone. Cause I'm not going to be able to give much, and you're going to live 40 years more than me. I want to at least give that experience and set things up to where when I'm gone, it's able to continue to where everyone that comes after me can live. And, you know, I've got to make up the time I'm going to lose on the tail end, basically. So for my push right now, it's like, I'm not working on today. I'm working 3 days in today to make up for the next two that I'm going to lose if I don't make it to 65 or to 60. And hopefully I will, but I'm behaving as if I don't. And if I get there, then I'll be able to enjoy 30 more years. But we'll see. And it's a different mindset. Most people in my position would have been like, well, screw all that. Just live life and enjoy it. But I'm not wired that way. So it's really not an option for me. But is that personal enough?
I feel we ended on a deep note. We started on a deep note, this podcast. This one's just a...
It's kind of depressing. Where's the the sad music to play in the background? No, I think it's important, though, for people to see the insight. It's behind the veil, right?
Yeah.
And find me another company and brand that's going to tell you that level of personal behind the scenes of what goes into the, you know, the day-to-day. And there's not much in business that shows that. I would say the best would be like Andy Frisilla with First Form. He exposes that side of things too. And it's very powerful. And we're not doing it to make any gain. We're doing it because when I was coming up, aside from Andy, I didn't have mentors to show it. And in business, people want to keep secrets. You have all the people, the fake people on social media, buy this Lamborghini, do this, invest in this. But you don't have the business operators that are building, you know, wealth and great American companies showing the path. You have a lot of the fake entrepreneurs doing it. But anyone where you can say, like, show me your product, show me your business, show me your staff, most of those people can't. And so for me, I feel like it's kind of a calling to show that, like the stuff we just talked about, the reality of it, because it would have helped me, and it did help me make my path cut that time in half of where we're at because of, we'll just say, Andy and like that side of business, and seeing and hearing that and knowing it's okay to feel this way. And sometimes, you know, it is suffering and it can be painful and it can be a challenge and everyone is going to judge you, and you just get it from all sides. It's not an easy road, and I think it's been painted as one, and it discredits what true entrepreneurs are doing. And so I like to expose it a little bit more. So like that last question, that's why I went a little bit further into it, is because you're not going to hear that from most business owners. And so I'll be the first one to tell you, and I don't want pity at all. Like, oh my gosh, that's the worst thing to do to me. And I don't take compliments very well either. I just like to move forward. But if I can show you guys a little bit of behind the scenes in the struggle, and I've given other brands the blueprint, you know this, if you ask me, I'll tell you exactly how to do it, because I know there's enough to go around, but I know the majority of you don't have the balls to do it. And that's the truth. Like, you haven't positioned yourself, and you don't have the wife and the kids that are understanding to allow you to go down the path required if you do this. Or you'll just go like most, like, oh, just go get finance and do this that way. That's a different level of risk that I don't want to play in. I want to build an American company that's sustainable, that doesn't get acquired and sold 10 times and owned by an investment group. I'm not doing that. So yeah. Anywho.
All right.
What else you got?
That's it. That's it for today.
All righty. Well, thank you guys all for tuning in. Hopefully we'll get to the point where maybe the next couple episodes we can go not away from Q&A, but maybe we can do something a little bit different, more deeper dive on maybe some products. Still, submit your questions. If you go to the website, supervolumeammunition.com, you'll see a tab that says podcast. If you click that tab, you can actually submit user questions there. You can also submit them onto through social media, but ideally you go put them in that tab because then it goes in a spreadsheet, and then Taylor can go in and pick the questions. As you've seen through the first, what is this, episode 3 or 2?
This is 3.
3. So the first 3 episodes, where I'm willing to discuss and talk about anything. So it can kind of go whatever way. And that's going to help us to mold the show based on the frequently asked questions on what you guys want to see and hear about. I don't want this entire podcast just to be me talking. That's why it's on YouTube. So we want to start showing some behind the scenes with the new facility, and we'll start doing other content there. But initially, this Q&A is to get a feel and a vibe of, you know, what you guys are interested in. Hopefully give you guys an inside look at what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, from the products to me personally, to managing the business, to everything in between. And if we can inspire, my goal as one of my purposes to inspire others to get into business and build companies. If we can do that through this podcast, that's awesome. If we can inspire you to do more in the ammo and gun industry, that's also the goal. So all right. Thank you guys all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.